This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. On today's roundtable, we'll look at America's mothers, aside from all the cards and celebrations of Mother's Day. How do you measure the worth of stay-at-home moms? How do mothers fare in the workplace? And do women have to choose, still, between work and family? Joining us from our studios in Chicago is Mary Mitchell, columnist with the Chicago Sun-Times, and in member station WLRN in Miami, freelance reporter and stay-at-home mom Yolanda Perdomo-Bindert. Finally, on the phone, Deborah Perry Piccioni, president of Choose to Lead Women Foundation. Thank you all for joining us.
Well, okay.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're getting mixed minus.
So all right, so we've got a conversation that starts with a thought-provoking study. The website salary.com found that if stay-at-home moms were to be paid, their wage would average around $130,000 annually, including overtime, which, of course, moms just don't get. Yolanda, as a stay-at-home mom, what do you think about that figure? All right.
Well, I think the money, it sounds good, but let me just say that the individual tasks and chores that were listed in that article, like the laundry and the cooking, you know, looking at it from the outside, it doesn't seem that challenging, but the cumulative effect of being on for hours on end is really taxing and exhausting, and it's really much harder to quantify.
So from your own personal experience, you're someone who's a working journalist who now is a stay-at-home mom. How many different hats do you wear? Let's just hear it.
Let's see. There's being the cook, the housekeeper, the person who is constantly changing the clothes of a three-year-old, the person who has to take him to the park twice a week for preschool. There's some traveling involved. There's nursing in terms of, you know, taking care of a scratched knee or other things that come up. I would say more than a dozen during the day.
That's a lot of jobs. Now, Deborah, let me get you in here. You have worked with Dr. Julianne Malvo to write a book and deals with women in politics. From an economic standpoint, what should the government do to help women who are either stay-at-home moms or working mothers do all of these jobs well? Is there a role for government in this?
Well, let me just say that, first of all, I am a new mother of twins, 12-week-old twins, so I understand from a very different perspective of not just the politics of women and work, but just dealing with motherhood and trying to balance out the work and family issue. And it's not that government has a role for I. It's really up to individual corporations and employers to take on a bigger role, because I'm not sure how you connect economics to motherhood. Because the problem with the study here is that we're taking tasks that everybody else has to do in America out there, whether it's laundry and cooking and providing whatever their needs are to keep up their household, and we're trying to apply economics to it. We're saying because you're a mother, you therefore should get paid for these things. And that's just the extreme to the point of where we are as a society. We've become very, very spoiled. So what is very stressful to us in this day and age, what we're going to have for dinner, are we going to make hamburger helper, are we going to order out pizza, would not even been a thought in our mother's generations. I mean, this is just the part of raising children. And you have a choice to decide whether you want to have children, whether you want to get married. I mean, our society really supports a lot of different ways that you can go about living your life. But now we're looking to tie economics and possible salaries to motherhood. And I don't know how you put a price on that.
Well, Mary, you know, let's frame it this way. On the one hand, you do have all these jobs that women do. Deborah is arguing that you can't really put a price tag on it. On the other hand, one of the sort of sore points in American divorce law has been, you know, how should women who've stayed at home be compensated for the time that they spent with their families if the family is breaking up? Do you think that there should be more give, either in terms of the relationships between men and women or government's role or business's role? If women are just out there on their own, that seems awfully unfair.
Well, first of all, I don't think that you can put a price on raising your children and what kind of job you do in raising your children, how much time you spend reading to them, how much time you spend being a soccer mom or, you know, the football coach or the basketball coach or any of those kinds of things. I don't think you can put a dollar on it. But the other thing here is that in valuing your children and putting value on your family, it becomes a personal thing for a woman to decide whether she's going to give up a career, so to speak, or take some time out of the workplace and what we used to call the rat race and take care of their family. In terms of when we get to the question of divorce, for instance, the bottom line is that if you stayed at home and the husband has worked, you are entitled to some of that income because you have shared in his success. Because you've stayed at home and taken care of those children, you've allowed him to do a much better job in taking care of his career. And that's what it should be based on, not so much on how many, you know, loads of clothes or laundry that you do, but the fact that you have been part of a partnership. And as part of a partnership, when that partnership is dissolved, you're entitled to some of those assets.
Yolanda, let me go back to you. There was a New York Times article, New York Times Magazine cover story on these successful dropout moms, women who had gone, in this case, to Princeton University and gotten great graduate degrees and gone on to high-priced careers and then just said, you know what, I can't deal with the stress of having a family and this career, so I'm dropping out. What do your friends say about the balancing act between motherhood and work? Is it still a situation where you have to make a firm choice one way or the other, or can you try to balance? And what do you think women today are trying to do in order to effect balance?
Well, I still get asked the question of when are you going back to work? And just because, you know, it's something that you don't go to outside your home, I think a lot of people don't realize that working within the home is a lot of work. And I think this issue often, you mentioned the article in the New York Times, it's presented as sort of an upper class, upper middle class phenomenon where women whose husbands make a lot of money so they can drop out. But I really think that there are a lot of people who aren't in that upper income bracket. And there's a lot of gray area where in with a lot of varying degrees where people have to decide, you know, on how to juggle, whether to work inside or outside the home. And for me personally, it's just been a trade-off with having fewer material things in terms of having a full-time salary. You know, I still have the same 19-inch TV that I've had for 15 years, and I'm not trading it in for a 72-inch plasma screen HD TV. My husband and I, we share one car, and I don't have a BlackBerry or a PDA or even a cell phone. I'm not living in an Amish existence. I'm not against technology. But right now, my lifestyle doesn't require those things in order to be with my child. And when my husband can watch him, or I should say when my son is taking a nap or when he's sleeping for the night, that's when I can do my work as a freelancer. And that's just the way it is for me. And I'm happy with that choice.
If I can just add to it, my organization, Choose to Lead Women's Foundation, is studying the situation you were just mentioning in the New York Times Magazine article where professional women, highly educated women, are opting out of the workforce for various reasons, presumably to raise children. But it is a growing phenomena to the point that economically it is going to affect our economy overall. It's such a serious issue that Harvard Business School recently surveyed their own graduates, and I don't remember the exact figure, but it was roughly around 37% of the MBAs who graduated from Harvard Business School are currently working in the workforce full-time during those childbearing years. So we've been asked by the Department of Labor to actually look at this problem and see if this is just something that's happening nationally or what's the impact going to be to the economy overall, because you're talking about women who could be future leaders, CEOs, politicians, reaching that top pinnacle of careers who are opting out, like I said, presumably to raise children.
Well, Deborah, let me follow up with Deborah briefly. You know, you are bringing up a Harvard Business School study, and of course, Harvard's president, Lawrence Summers, is the one who recently got castigated or at least scrutinized for making comments that women just couldn't hack it.
In science and technology.
Yeah, but there was an implication that women somehow are different. Women are different in the case that women can bear children biologically. So is that difference really causing differences in income and earnings, or is it more of a question of life choices? Because I think that's something that people are fighting over right now.
Well, it's an interesting topic because there is this observation out there that women are dropping out because they're married to these rich husbands, as an earlier guest had said. But there's also the question that we're coming across anecdotally about women who are being pushed out once they have children. We know plenty of lawyers who went back to their firms after having children, tried to go into a part-time schedule, and then was told by their partners or their managing bosses that, you know, we just don't have the appropriate work for you. And so that's what we're trying to undergo at this current time, is to look at the anecdotal evidence and also seeing how to quantify this evidence, really where things are at and how it's going to affect the economy long term if we don't have these women in the workforce.
Mary, now you're...
This is a point that I think that's missed often in this conversation. That is corporations' loss is a community's gain. We're going to have highly educated women who've made a choice to really spend time mothering, which is a great career choice. I mean, these are the women that are going to be at the PTA meetings. These are the women who are going to be at the village hall and dealing with those kind of issues. These are the women who are going to be at the forefront of raising families. And families, is strong families make strong communities. Strong communities make strong cities. So I just really salute those women, and I just think that it's corporations' loss.
Well, Mary, you know, let's follow up on that thought. You're a columnist with the Chicago Sun-Times, a very diverse city. You've got large Black and Latino populations, among others. A lot of people, especially women of color, feel that they can't afford not to work during their childbearing years. What have you found just living in Chicago in terms of how perhaps working class women, some of the women you may have interviewed or talked to, process that choice, if they see it as a choice at all?
Well, first of all, many of them don't, because unfortunately, as in Chicago, and especially in low income, I would say urban areas, everywhere, that you have a lot of single mothers, and single mothers really don't have the choice of not working. They do have to go to the workplace. They do have to use daycare, and they are frustrated. They are stressed every day because they don't really have a choice. The other thing here is, I've raised four kids. And I've worked with all my children. I've worked full time, and I would say, looking back now as a grandmother, I miss those years. You know, they did well, and then I don't have an axe murderer or anything like that, but I know that they would have been better prepared if I had personally made the choice of staying home. So it is, for single mothers, it's a very hard bargain that they have to drive in order to just pay the bills. It is a very hard choice.
Yolanda, how exactly did you make your choice to be at home rather than being in the workplace? What sort of clicked for you?
Well, once I realized I was going to have this child, I had actually just moved to a new city, and my husband, let me just back up a little bit. My husband had moved for me in my work, working at a radio station in Cleveland, and then when I moved for him, it was one of these, well, if we have a kid, how are we going to do this? Who is going to work, and can I work part-time? And then trying to figure things out in terms of a salary and going back to getting paid. Half of my salary, the way that we figured it out after making numerous phone calls and doing research, half of my salary would have gone to a daycare provider. Exactly. So that's really a lot of money going into having someone else taking care of your child. So we figured that, well, let's do with fewer things, and I can stay home. And if the situation was reversed, if my husband were to lose his job and I had to work full time, then he would be there to care for the child. So, I mean, in terms of making that decision, it was sort of natural, but it was, you know, it did come after doing some research and after doing some reading, and it wasn't that big of a deal.
Do any of you see men making these same decisions? There certainly are stay-at-home fathers. Do any of you know any of them?
Oh, sure. Well, absolutely. There's somebody right in my neighborhood. And the point is that we're also not discussing is that
there's
a lot of alternatives for people to be able to work from home and make money. Yolanda can certainly do freelance articles. I myself work from home. The man down the street who's a stay-at-home father actually does trading from home, and his wife goes into the office every day. So, you know, there are great, great advances because of technology that allow us to make money in creative ways and not be part of that traditional workforce, so that you can be there to work and raise your children simultaneously.
Deborah, Mary, go ahead.
Mary. Yeah, here's the point. I don't think that as a society we should make when a person makes a choice, whether it's a man or a woman, to make that child a priority, if that means staying at home for them, then we shouldn't make that seem like that's some kind of weird decision. That is the way it should be. You bring a child into the world, you're responsible for that child and how that child turns out. And if you make that choice of bringing a child into the world, then you shouldn't be looked upon, you know, feel guilty. It used to be you felt guilty if you left a child and went to workplace. Now some women are being made to feel guilty because they're staying at home.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, I think, in our society today that we don't really embrace families or motherhood or fatherhood in the way that we say we do. I recently traveled out of the country, went down to South America, and I was pregnant during that time, and people were running out of their way to help, and nothing was more important than bringing a child into the world down in Argentina, where I traveled to. Here it's, you know, you're in Washington, D.C., you get on the metro, you're 9 months pregnant, nobody really gets up to offer you a seat. And I think it's really unfortunate, and it kind of shows how selfish we've become in our society, and that, you know, really parenting is not this priority that we so-called give a lot of, you know, political speak to.
Well, let's close out with the question I started with. Who is going to move the ball forward? Is it government? Is it individuals? Is it corporations? Very briefly, I'm going to go through each of you. Mary.
I think that there's a role for corporations. If you value the employee and what the employee brings to the table, whether it's a father or a mother, you will make sure that the workplace is a place that respects their decision.
Yolanda?
I think, beginning with corporations, I think the offering of things like flex time are just as important as offering more money. The more time you can give to either parent is going to be of benefit to the child in the long run.
It sounds like both of you so far are citing the corporation. Let's go to Deborah.
Well, you know where I'm going to cite for with your other guest as well. And, you know, even from where I sit politically, we got to get past this corporate greed, and we've got to be able to embrace families. And, you know, the one thing that Julianne Melville and I had the opportunity to do was kind of canvass across this country talking about women in work through, you know, our book tour. And I can't tell you corporation after corporation that we spoke to, Microsoft being one of them out in Redmond, Washington, talked about the fact that these mothers just had no time off to leave the workplace, to attend that soccer game, to go to the doctor's office, whatever they needed that time for. And that's really unfortunate, because corporations are going to lose in the long run if they don't realize that they need to be more family friendly.
All right, that was Deborah Perry Piccioni. She's president of Choose to Lead Women's Foundation. We've also been speaking with Mary Mitchell. She's a columnist and editorial board member of the Chicago Sun-Times. And finally, with freelance journalist and stay-at-home mom, Yolanda Perdomo Binder. Thank you all for joining us in this conversation.
Thank you so much.
And we'll come back to it sometime soon, I'm sure.
Thank you.